a true journey of faith or a life worth living. I titled it A Life Worth Living because it was an exact antonym of my life. Ever since I was a child, I've never had anything handed to me. I've had to work and struggle and fight for everything I've had. I went through two divorces, financial problems, alcohol, just a little bit of everything. I've been on my own since I was 16 years old. My parents had kicked me out of the house. Went from job to job just trying to make a living. And so my life was anything but worth living. So I called it A Life Worth Living. And so once I, this was my first book that I wrote, and it still is very close to my heart. And it was the first one I put on audiobook. It was, I wasn't sure about audiobooks at the time, and I was dabbling around in it, and someone actually auditioned to do it, and it sounded great. Joel Duane Hare was fantastic at it. I think that everybody, once you listen to it, maybe get something from it. But anyway, I just wanted to welcome you and then introduce this segment. I wasn't sure if I wanted to put it on here or not, but I decided to go ahead and do it and do a personal introduction to it. I hope you enjoy it. And just hang on, because it is a very bumpy ride. It's like a roller coaster with more lows than highs. And at one point, I even found myself in a whole nother state, preaching in a church, and I had the whole of the church come against me at one point. So it's interesting. Just sit back, and I hope you enjoy it.
Chapter 1. The Beginning. What do you want me to do? What else is there for me to do, Jesus? The doctors and nurses, all within earshot, heard this. She was on her deathbed, eyes looking to an unseen face, unseen by the nurses anyway. My grandmother was minutes away from death and still witnessing to people. Everything I knew growing up about God came from one person, my Grandma Birdie. She was the epitome of a lady, very polite, never raised her voice, loved by all her friends and neighbors, and well respected. She would read to me from a children's Bible as I sat scrunched up next to her on her couch. She had no formal education, never taught to read. In fact, she never went to school. She was very sickly as a child. Her entire family took care of her most of her youth. But here she was, reading a book to her 4-year-old grandchild. Grandma Birdie was not always this little, God-fearing woman I'd always known. As a young woman of only 13, she gave birth to my aunt, and it would be almost 30 years later before my dad would come along. Back then, she was a heavy drinker and would ride on the back of motorcycles. On one occasion, a woman jumped my grandmother, knocking her to the ground. The woman was very large. My grandmother was barely 5'3" and 100 pounds. She easily held my grandmother down until my aunt, her sister, came up and stabbed the woman to get her off my grandmother. She was no angel, that is, until God got a hold of her and turned her life around. Before that, she would see the inside of a prison due to my grandfather's thievery. He was a mean man, from what I've heard. I never met him. He died well before I was born. The stories vary on how they met and how he died. A relative, the only one I ever met on his side of the family, told me that he died in prison when someone stabbed him with a pickaxe. I came across his death certificate. It says he died from natural causes. Of course, back then, that would have been considered natural causes in prison. So I guess it's destined to be a mystery. I do know he used to hit my grandmother and once fired a gun off beside her ear. She threw him down and took away the gun. She remarried a man who raised my father until dying 2 years before I was born. My grandmother was literally brought back from the dead before my dad was born. The way the story was told to me, she was in a car accident and had broken almost all the bones in her body, tearing part of her brainstem. The boy driving the car thought she was going to die, so he said she was the one driving. My grandmother had never driven a car at all. All the doctors at the time insisted she go to a mental hospital to live out the rest of her life. Her mother, a Cherokee Indian known as Big Mama, refused to let them institutionalize her and said she would come home to stay with herself and my great-grandfather. He burned to death in a house fire after having a stroke years later. My grandma Birdie was like a child after the accident. Nevertheless, Big Mama would force her to get out of bed and push her legs to get her walking. She had to feed her like a child. Then, one day, while walking down the hallway, my grandma stopped, looked up and said, "What are we doing?" as if she had awoken from a dream. She seemed completely back to normal. Occasionally, she would have relapses, but eventually completely healed. This alone should show how the power of God can work. Now consider this. If Big Mama had put her in a home, she most likely would have spent the rest of her life as a vegetable. My dad would never have been born, and neither would I. Now my grandmother, after living this life that I wouldn't know about until years later, sits reading to me from this children's Bible storybook. This is a true testament of God's mercy. She prayed for me daily. I heard her before I would go to sleep at night. I heard her pray as soon as her feet hit the floor. She loved the Lord, and with good reason. She survived cancer, strokes, and heart attacks. God delivered her from anything the devil threw at her, even breaking both hips. As I said before, she had no education but could read. It was all God. You see, God is the best teacher there is. We just have to open up to Him and let us teach us, not lean on our own understanding. I spent most all summers with my grandmother. My brother was very much a mama's boy. He did not travel too far from her. I was born in Johnson City, Tennessee in 1975. When I was 2 years old, my dad was looking for work. My mom's father had moved to Chicago and offered for us to come up. So we moved my dad, mom, who was pregnant at the time with my brother, and me. That's where my brother was born, Cook County Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. We were destined to be at odds. My grandma Birdie always bought me nice clothes to wear. My brother always wore pants with holes and ripped shirts. We were definitely the odd couple. We moved back to Tennessee a year later. My dad purchased some land and bought a single-wide trailer. It was in a little place called Cache Hollow. That would be my home for the next 15 years. My mother and father were never real churchgoers except on Easter. My father only went to appease my mother. Mom had faith, but not acting faith. My dad confessed he was an agnostic. If he could not see it or touch it, it did not exist. My mother grew up with her grandmother. She was handed over to her shortly after birth, and my great-grandmother raised her alone. She was a wonderful lady, full of life. Even at 94, she just kept going. One of my earliest memories of church was with her. It was what people now call holy rollers. The preachers preached up and down the aisle and everyone prayed loudly. It was a little frightening, yet intriguing. I was only 6 or 7 at the time, but can still remember it. I loved her so much. She had a large family, 11 kids in all. I was a lesser grandson, not in her eyes, but in perspective. So my time was spent with Grandma Birdie. We had a neighbor friend named Chuck that I stayed with quite a bit growing up. He was a fascinating old guy. He was originally from Arkansas, but joined the Air Force during World War II when he was 18. His plane was shot down during that time. In fact, before his flight, his squad was scheduled for a run, but at the last minute they changed the flight plan and the squad that replaced him was wiped out. After he was injured, he left the military. He went to a college in Florida but dropped out when his mother took ill. He was a virtual encyclopedia on movies and actors. Thanks to him, I grew up with a fascination for old movies. Even today, older guys will ask me who an actor is in an old movie or show. After the war, he flew for one of the big airlines until he had to retire from his old war injury. He settled in Chicago, Illinois. That is where he met my grandfather. He was married at one time and had two kids. He was now divorced and living with his cousin Carl in his beautiful house. Chuck did all the driving, and Carl, being a gourmet chef, did all the cooking. Carl was never married nor had kids, but he was a wonderful person. A big, strong guy who was in the Korean War. He contracted malaria and credits one nurse for saving his life. In the mid-80s, Carl decided he wanted a change. He sold his house and restaurant and moved to Johnson City, Tennessee. Once my grandfather heard of this, he immediately sent word to my mother and asked her to introduce ourselves and make them feel welcome, which we did. There was my friend Chuck, his cousin Carl, and a sweet little lady that looked like Dr. Ruth who rented the downstairs apartment. Every Sunday, like clockwork, we would go over to their house for dinner. I don't remember what year it was, as I was very young at the time, but Chuck went down to check on their renter and found her dead. She died of a massive heart attack. A few years later, Chuck walked into the kitchen and found his cousin Carl dead. His head was resting on his hand, elbow propped up on the bar as if he had just fallen asleep. Here's where things got very chaotic. Chuck did not own anything but his 1985 Cadillac, which was only a few years old. He bought a new car every couple of years. He was not on Carl's will. Carl had three brothers. Once they found out Carl had died, they immediately rushed to Tennessee and began going through everything Carl had owned. They gave Chuck a few weeks to get out and put the house up for sale. Carl had magnificent paintings hanging on the walls, with an elegant light built into the frame. They were valued in the thousands. The brothers went straight for Carl's jewelry and began filling their pockets. After it was all said and done, Chuck got nothing. We moved in with Chuck for a week, and he never forgot it. Chuck ended up renting a small single-wide trailer in the same little hollow that my family lived in. He became my best friend. I stayed with him after school until Mom came home, and the occasional weekend. It was not until my parents began construction on their new house that I really got to know him. I moved in with him while the house was being built. My brother, mother, and father moved in with one of my dad's cousins. I first started smoking cigars at Chuck's. I started drinking there also. It became routine for us to play Yahtzee or some other board game while I drank scotch and he drank early times. My parents didn't know any of this, of course. I was around 16 years of age. Once the house was finished, I went back home. My parents and I never truly got along very well, especially my mother. I had a smart mouth and a quick wit, which is a dangerous combination for a teenager. I knew she had a wild temper, but I would still deliberately mumble something under my breath when she would tell me to do something that I thought was ridiculous. After all, teenagers know everything and parents are stupid. She would grab whatever was closest and throw or hit me with it. Didn't matter what it was. One time, it was a broom, another a fire poker. She even threw a window fan at my dad once. I did bring a lot of it on myself. The worst part was when she would tell my dad. My dad was another story altogether. It took more to get him that angry. I also had a gift in that area. One time, I said something that made him so mad that he almost broke my arm. Another time, he hit me with a chain. When my brother and I were very young, he would stand us in the hallway, grab our belt loops, and swat us with a belt. When I got older, the discipline got worse. For some reason, though, the more serious the offense, the easier we got off. For instance, I took some of his alcohol. My dad drank quite a bit back then, and put some of it in a jar to take to a friend. I replaced the missing contents with water. He found out, and all I got was grounded. My brother was at the heart of a lot of it. He would do things that he knew would get us into trouble, but somehow, he always got out of it. Once, when I was a teenager, my dad knocked my door down, flew into my room in a rage, and backhanded me. He turned to my brother and said, "See what you made me do?" And then backhanded him too. We were taught manners at a very young age. We would go to family reunions, and after we ate, all the other kids would be up playing, but we would remain seated until another adult excused us. I once belched at the dinner table, and my dad backhanded me so hard it knocked me out of my seat. He said, "Go clean the blood off your lip and finish eating." That was disciplinary in Dad.